This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Week in wrestling, indies and international. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, man?
Oh, same old, same old. Having a interesting couple of days here. Watching all of the WXW weekend stuff, recording long podcasts with Quentin and Brock, talking all about all of that has been kind of a lot, I guess. So,
up to the hype?
Yeah, I mean,
I know they just dropped on high spots, I think, yesterday.
Not quite at the peak as last year for everything, I would say. Last year had some higher highs, but everything's really solid storytelling, and WXW is really able to stand on its own in a lot of ways, so they don't need a lot of kind of outsiders to fill in the gaps, I think, is a positive for them, is that they're, I would say, the overall quality of everything probably drops off slightly, but that's also with using less of the kind of imports and world-class talent, if you will.
I'm always a big fan of tournaments, especially on the indie level. I think they're a great thing and a cool and something really easy to do and keep score. It's always fun. It's funny because it seems like indies are doing it regularly. You know, you have the Progress, you have your, the 16 karat with WXW, what's the one in PWG?
Bola.
You know, I mean, these are just a few, SCI. Traditionally, tournaments have never drawn on the big stage. Why do you think they draw kind of on the lower levels, on the indie level?
Probably just because, the more hardcore fans are wanting to get the more bang for their buck. Wrestling-wise, you are getting, I don't know if you're necessarily getting more matches, but it definitely feels like you're getting more important matches. Like you said, basic story, instantly told, respected as the kind of thing. I think for casual fans, I think it's too much to have to pay attention to get the story, where, like, a tournament, you have to, kind of keep in mind who won what, where they're at, placement, all this stuff, while kind of just match by match with a little bit of background story you can get caught up on really easily. So I think that's probably why the tournament style doesn't work as well in the mainstream wrestling as it does on the indies, I guess. I guess that would make the most sense. Yeah, I mean, what do you think? Like, do you have any?
I really don't know. Couldn't really put a finger on it. Again, I think it just comes down to two different things with indie wrestling versus, on a grander scale. In the past, it had always been about stars, so it was always easier to draw. That's why, for example, WrestleMania 4, didn't draw as well as WrestleMania 5 because WrestleMania 5 was booked based on Hogan versus Savage, while WrestleMania 4 was a tournament. I think it's because tournaments are a tournament, while drawing on the big scale, I think has a lot to do with who's on the show, and I think you get more excited with a grudge match of, let's say, Hogan versus Savage versus, we know what the first brackets are, but after that, we don't know anything after that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're not able to promote the matches, get people excited and hyped for matches, because it's just going to be based on what happens in the tournaments.
Yeah, I think you can do that better on a smaller scale.
Yeah, because I think that people are more excited for all possible matchups, while maybe on the larger scale, people are looking for specific matchups. Also, I think WWE and maybe other mainstream wrestling companies have had a history of not delivering the dream matchups in the tournaments that could happen. While I think the indies have done a good job of, even when it comes across almost too kind of how did that happen to line up that way with the brackets, of almost always delivering those matchups. I think about Bola even just last year. You got Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak in the tournament. They're not against each other in the first round, and then you kind of expect, they're going to have that matchup, and then, of course, it ends up happening. Similarly with Ricochet and Ospreay and Bola a couple years before, not against each other in the first round, but it ends up still delivering. So you kind of know that you can count on PWG to give you the, you know, quote unquote dream matchups that you want out of the competitors in the tournament, even if they're not already announced. While WWE and New Japan also, I mean, if you think about New Japan Cup and stuff, there's a lot of times where they don't go to that that dream matchup. They don't deliver it because they think that they can get away with not doing it. So while you talk about that, the problem with tournaments is that you can't, the crowd can't get excited for matches that they don't know because they're not announced yet, because they're, you know, hidden in the brackets. At the same time, when you also use that as an excuse to then not give those matches because, oh, hey, they didn't expect to see this match, so we just won't give it to them. That's part of what turns people off on the concept as a whole, because they're not being given the quality that they might hope for, even if they don't expect it.
Yeah, I can see that. I totally see that. And, you know, speaking of tournaments, Papa Hales and Jeremy Schneider have the Making Towns Classic coming up May 12th. If you're interested in tickets, you can hit up MikeHales57@gmail.com for tickets. May 12th is a double shot. It's two shows in one day, 3:30 and 7:30. And they're doing a tournament. It's all females wrestling. Do you think this is an interesting concept? Having, you know, we've seen female wrestling draw. It's becoming more than just a niche in wrestling. And here they're doing a double shot, a tournament, one-day tournament, but two shows. I think I find the concept pretty interesting because, you can get people to buy double dick tickets. You get more bang for your buck by putting on two shows, if you will, in the same day. But it could be overkill doing two shows in one day. And that's, to me, that's pretty ambitious. But I think the girls, everyone knows, Miss Papa Hales has been a big advocate of female wrestling. And, I mean, he'll always say just wrestling in general, but he's always been a fan of the female wrestling graps. And so I feel the girls will definitely go out and work real hard for him and Jeremy, and just kind of out of pride's sake, not just because they're working for them. Do you see this something that could be actually work more regularly if you're running a tournament, doing a two shot, or do you think that's going to be burnout for people?
I think there's a chance it could burn some people out for sure. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Are they planning on doing a morning and an evening show? Is that the
3:30 and then a 7 o'clock show?
3:30 and then 7. So
yeah. So I think it's a 2 hour, maybe two and a half hour opening show, and then do same thing.
Yeah, and then have like a 2 hour break in the middle. I wouldn't like say, oh, have a 4 hour show or whatever. But I almost think that doing it that way might end up hurting the crowd even more, honestly. Because it just turns into then like 6 hour day. I mean, the 2 hour break in the middle, like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be enough for the crowd to really recharge, honestly. So,
we'll see. Happens at Mania weekend constantly. Cause I mean, well, you know, when people see two to four shows in a day, I mean, so it's feasible, but here you're seeing the exact same talent, but it's episodic in the sense that, you know, you're going to finally see who the winner is. So you might want to, it's rough to just, I mean, for sure you don't want to just buy part one. I mean, that's just not, you know. So, I mean, you're either going to buy part two or buy both tickets, it seems like, you know.
Yeah, I think that's probably, most likely you're going to end up going to the whole thing, I would assume. But I guess some people could.
And not breaking up in 2 days, I mean, I understand that financially because he's probably paying for the building one day, not a 2-dayer, you know?
Right, and then hotel rooms and everything else that goes with that. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see. I can understand a lot of the logistics, but at the same time, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. And I wonder how much of the crowd is going to not feel gypped, but, you know, I mean, it does feel like, well, if it's in the same day, why couldn't this be one show? So right. We'll see. They're going to have to really deliver. So, I mean, you talked about the girls are going to work hard. I believe that they are, but I think that the matches are going to really have to deliver to make this seem like a worthwhile venture for the fans there. I don't have a negative forecast. I think it's going to...
And the ticket prices aren't bad when you think about it. It's like $45 for front row, but it's for both shows. So, I mean, the ticket prices are in line, so you're getting two shows for it. So they're definitely, they're smart in the sense that they're packaging up the ticket prices and stuff. I've always been fascinated about going out there and promoting women's wrestling and doing a tournament. I'm a fan of women's wrestling, and I always want them on shows, but I'm always nervous about it all just being exclusive.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
We'll see, but I mean, Papa House has a lot of people who really, really love him and like him, and so I mean, it helps having a promoter that people respect, you know. So there might be some of that going on too, helping him, right. Where people want to see some seeds, so they might come out in droves. So I'm just curious on how they'll draw. I really am.
Yeah, I'm gonna be excited to see how this turns out. Like I said, I wouldn't make a negative forecast for anything right now. I wouldn't say it's not going to end up being pretty good. I think that we'll get something out of this for sure that's going to be worth checking out, I think. I don't know if they have any plans for VOD of any kind, distributing. They haven't. I don't know if they put that out there, have they?
I have not heard anything.
Okay, so we'll see how that goes. But either way, I think it's definitely a very interesting situation.
A lot of good talent. Sue Young, Alley Cat. You have Faye from Mid-Atlantic. You have Angeles Lane, Hudson Envy, and just to name a few. I mean, Vita Scott. I mean, there's a lot of people on there. So a lot of talent. So it should be an interesting tournament.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm looking forward to it.
And then we saw over at Action Wrestling, we talked about how Austin Theory dropped out. And I actually like the above. I like Dominic Greeny as his replacement. I mean, I think on last week's show, I was talking about how if they replace him with somebody, I hope they replace him with someone who can bang with Gunner, and that's definitely Dominic can bang with Gunner. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm definitely into that match big time. I think with that and with Yehi and Kane Justice, you're hitting the similar kind of quadrants of match style, so it's definitely exciting. I'm definitely into that one for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're bringing on, I mean, then you have Eric Royals working the show, and he's working, I'm trying to find out off the top of my head who he's working.
Michael
he's working
Michael Spencer.
Spencer. So far the matches have been announced are pretty. I've not seen Michael Spencer work, but I mean, I'm always for Eric Royal. So I mean, I'm liking what I'm seeing here. And then I think so far on Scenic City, I think the only person that's been announced so far has been Hollis, and obviously Kyle Matthews won the tournament. I won the right to get in from last year's tournament. So again, I'm looking forward to those type of to see how they do and stuff. I get real excited about it. And then, I mean, the big news, I guess, came out of WWE, where peer pressure and sponsor pressure made Vince. I mean, I'm sure he's pissed because it was his idea. Naming the female Battle Royal after Fabulous Moolah. And David Bix's band covers it really well in his Deadspin article, which you guys should check out. But, man, first you hear about the fans rallying behind getting Michael Elgin not booked, and you've been hearing it about Rich Swann. I kind of feel bad about Swann because his wife is kind of, not just kind of, has totally supported him. And it was like they got into an argument, and it just kind of blew up and cost him his WWF job, and now he's getting painted as a bad guy. I'm not sure. I just think they had a bad night, you know. With his wife saying everything's good, I think that we got to take it as a grain of salt, and now he's canceled some of his bookings. But, I mean, the big news is, I mean, the fans, they listen to the fans, and Snickers told Vince, pretty much, we can't have Fabulous Moolah as the name on the women's Battle Royal. I think that's awesome. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really interesting to see that happening. Obviously, the brands are going to hold Vince more accountable than he's ever held himself accountable in history. So that is definitely, we'll see how it goes in the future from here. If he feels like he's not, you know, impenetrable anymore in his ability to just do whatever he wants and make everyone deal with it. So yeah, it's really interesting. I think Swan says that he's retiring from wrestling because of the whole situation. We'll see how
long. I'm sure he'll blow over.
Right.
I think he's just right now. He's just down, and then, you know, wanting to come wrestle and then have the fans turn on you, it probably doesn't help either. You know.
Right. No, for sure. And I mean, you know, I know that there is a lot of issues in history with domestic issues and victims who say that everything's right. Fine, even if it's not. And so everything, there's a lot to everything, or there could be a lot to everything. We don't necessarily know, but when it's their life, like you said, I think it's kind of hard to, you know, applaud people who continue to go after him when, you know, I mean, his wife is staying with him. It's their relationship. They're choosing to continue it. Whether you agree or disagree, that's not your decision to really make for them.
Right.
This is their life and their relationship. If you want to not support Rich Swann and you don't want to support what you think is a toxic relationship or whatever, then I understand. But we just talked about the Making Town Classics. Do you turn around and say you don't want to support her being booked either? Because if she's saying everything's fine, even if she is in a, you know, in a setting where she's, let's say she feels afraid for her life to openly speak or whatever, I mean, you don't really know the case of what's going on. So if you're saying, well, this all just seems yucky, I'm going to not support Rich Swann because he beat his wife, well, you're kind of assuming that, which is, I mean, yes, sure, it's a safe bet to make that the man is the aggressor, but there's toxic relationships that go both ways or go one way or go, you know, either, you know, whatever. So to then blindly go like, well, I still support Su Young, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's hypocritical, but I am going to say, like, maybe it's something to think about. Like, if your issue is that you think they have a toxic relationship, you don't want to support it, then you should probably actually be questioning why you would support one and not the other when you don't have anything to go off other than the fact that the cops arrested him, which no matter what it comes down to, it's not always, oh, they're going to arrest the man, but it's a lot more likely that if the cops are called to a situation and there's a domestic dispute, ever since, I mean, this was what I was told by a police officer after the O.J. Simpson stuff happened, and it was widely reported that the cops allowed a domestic dispute to go unanswered, or not unanswered, but they showed up, and when they said everything was fine, they just left, and then afterwards it came out that there was more abuse that night. It was not the murder, but this was before the murder, but, it, you know, all of that got tangled into the case when they're talking about his history of domestic abuse. Ever since then, the cops are pretty much told that if there's a problem, someone needs to be taken away. They don't necessarily need to go to jail at all times if they feel like they can't, but they usually don't leave both people in the same house if there's been a domestic call already. So someone's going to get arrested, or someone's going to at least, you know, hey, maybe we can give you a ride. Do you have somewhere else? Maybe you can hang out for tonight. Maybe you can call a friend. Maybe you can get out of here, you know, and we're going to wait until you go, or we'll take you if maybe you've been drinking, whatever. So to say, well, he's arrested, so that means he must have been the one who did something wrong. No, he was arrested based on eyewitness testimony that then is being said to be maybe incorrect, and then we're being told, well, Su Young says that this is what's happening. He says this is what's happening. There's a mix and confusion, everything. It's all a big mess, and again, so to my mind, I just don't understand why you say, well, fuck him, but she's fine. Because the problem is that they have a bad relationship, and if they're continuing on with it, you don't want to support negative relationships, people who are shitty, then you should probably not support either of them. Or support
both of
them.
And, you know, even just because you don't support something doesn't mean you don't have to comment on it either. And,
exactly.
And you know what? I mean, yeah, because I think there's a lot. I think there's with the Rich Swann and area, I think there's a big gray area there. And,
there's too much that we don't know as fans. And,
yeah.
And I don't necessarily want to buy a ticket to go see a Rich Swann match or a Rich Swann show. Sure, I totally get that. But at the same time, I mean, I see people who are, or they're going to be totally fine with the Macon Town Classics and anything that has to do with Su Yung. And while I get it that she didn't get arrested, I mean, she, like you said, she's defending him. And yes, I completely understand that there's women and men. Yep. There's a lot of different people who get in abusive relationships and then feel the need to defend their abuser because they're scared. I totally understand. But, you know, that doesn't make her, just because that's something that does happen, that doesn't make her definitely that and 100% innocent. That's also being naive to assume that side of things. So I just think you have to question all parts of this in that you don't understand it. So maybe don't, like, I'm not saying don't ruin a man's life or whatever. Sure, don't support Rich Swann, that's fine. But don't, I don't know, maybe don't go completely off the deep end about it just because you think you know what happened.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's definitely a gray area. She, like she said, she has plenty of flaws in her, and she's been at fault in a lot of things. And sometimes you got to take what they're saying at face value, too, because we don't know. We're not in that house. We're not in that situation. And it's a lot tougher. It's a lot easier to prove when against Michael Elgin when there's statements in black and white. And stuff, as opposed to, police reports that you never know exactly what goes down. But when you write something, you know exactly what's going down. And what I think about with Bix's article, I mean, I'm sure Vince is probably looking to find cement shoes for David Bix's man. which I find hilarious. Because this is a Vince. I mean, this is Vince because he was close to the Moolah growing up. This was a Vince call, and now they're telling him he can't honor the woman he respected. It's and you know what? It's true. It's like when we talked about Elgin, I mentioned how many scummy people are in wrestling, and I don't know if I mentioned Moolah, but I know I mentioned Snuka. And during that 80s heyday, there was quite a bit of, you know, bad people in wrestling and who have done bad things. And Moolah's up there with exploitation of women. And to do that, we have Vince just, you know, it's funny because this is ultimately this is what Vince wanted. I mean, Vince was the one who brought wrestling out from the smoke-filled arenas into this and making him a public trading system. And now he's got to answer to people. When he never had to do in the past, I find it, I don't know if his arrogance can handle it. I'm sure it's eating him alive right now. And I wonder who the target is going to be. Is it going to be the fans? Is it going to be, cause he can't punish Snickers, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He has to just grit and bear on this one, unfortunately. And it is kind of funny to think of, you know, in the Attitude Era when they were hot, he probably would have put something out against them, or, you know, he had that ability to, and now he just doesn't. He's got to bite his tongue. So yep. We'll see what he does. We'll see who ends up winning the tournament. Maybe people are talking about James Ellsworth returning to team with Braun. Maybe he actually returns to win the women's tournament or the women's battle royal here, just to stick it to the fans.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And yeah, I know last week we were talking about drawing, but I want to specifically talk about it. We were kind of beating around the bush about the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes drawing 10,000 people in that stadium. I mean, if they're able to get 10,000 people in there without regular television, that's saying something, because, I mean, that'll be the only time they've ever done it. I mean, they got to put up a crackerjack of a card. I mean, obviously Cody and Omega is what they're going to be doing, I'm sure. Makes you curious on who they're going to have. The Young Bucks is going to have some interesting act to bump on, which I just don't know, man. Do you think they can get 10,000?
I don't know if they can get 10,000, but I mean,
I don't think they can. I think we're confusing hot acts. If they're going to get 10,000, they're going to need a lot of New Japan help, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, they're going
to need, and they might need to have, like, a really secondary money match, which to me would be a Daniel Bryan versus a CM Punk type of match. I just don't know.
I can't think of who. I really can't think of who they what they could book. I mean, you could do Golden Lovers versus Young Bucks. It'll be a rematch at that point. Maybe you do something like that, and then if you could get.
Well, you couldn't. You need Omega for Cody.
Well, I mean, if you can get Punk, maybe for Cody, maybe Jericho, something like that. Like, maybe
yeah.
you can pull something. I don't know if people care about Jericho versus Cody, though, you know, at all, really.
And I think part of this is to prove that Cody and the Young Bucks are the draw. And I think bringing Jericho in there would hurt that illusion.
Right. Well, I think that, I mean, they're going to need everything they can. But on top of it, I mean, Cody, what, he bet Meltzer $1 for this?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How much do they care about the 10,000 number, really? And how much do they just want to pull this off and they're using that as a catalyst to do it? It's going to be interesting to see.
Well, you know, bottom line is they don't get the 10,000, it's going to be a failure to them.
I mean, it's going to, I think... I don't. Because, that's the thing, I mean, is, I don't
that's
know.
That's the number. The 10,000 is the number.
That's
what they draw 10,000.
That's what I question, though. Do they have any kind of design? Do they really believe that they're going to draw 10,000, or are they playing off of the social media aspect of it? They're smart enough to know that that will rally fans behind them in the show to talk about the 10,000 and all this. But when it really comes down at the end of the day, do they really care? Does Cody really care? Do the Young Bucks really care about the 10,000? You know what I mean? Like,
I personally think Cody thinks he's a huge draw. And I think he wants to prove that he can draw. I think that 10,000 means, I think it means more to Cody than does the Bucks.
Okay. Well, I can definitely see that it means something to Cody.
But I think also for the Bucks, if they're able to get to draw 10,000, it kind of quantifies everything. I think it justifies or shows all. It's kind of like flubbing their nose at the old school, old guard. So I think they want it. If they don't get it, then the old guard can always say, "Look, they didn't draw the 10,000."
Right, and they'll be able to kind of hold that over them or whatever. But yeah, I still wonder what it's going to mean for them and for kind of everything. It's going to be very interesting. It's, you know, trying to think of what they can book, what they can pull to make it work is a lot of fun right now. And I just wonder, I mean, how committed are they? Not committed, but how much do they really believe the 10,000 is a likely number, and how much of it is we're going to do this thing. It's going to hopefully be successful by making money. And 10,000 is just a number that's put out there as kind of part of the show, but you know, because it's easier to say that. If you're not talking about the 10,000, then what are they talking about when they're putting on this show? You know what I mean? They're not really, they don't have anything. So having just a number, especially one that's really high, is exciting. I don't know. Is there a chance that they can pull off 10,000? Probably not, honestly.
I just can't imagine. I mean, they need a lot of fly-ins.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I just really don't see it.
They'd have to piggyback off something to get 10 grand in there. I mean, I just can't.
Well, they're doing like a podcast festival as well or something. I mean, I don't know that helps in any way. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm excited for this as well, but we'll see. I don't know.
Do you remember when their date is, anyway?
September 1st? September...
Yeah, so we have a while away.
Yeah.
I'm just curious on how they're going to heat this thing up, and...
I'm
curious on how they're going to... Yeah, they're going to... They got to take their time and really get some storytelling, and you know what? I think if I was them, I'd talk to Chris Jericho and ask him how to build some angles, because that guy, he knows how to build some angles. I mean... He turned a washed up Chris Jericho into the hottest act, and he caught lightning in a bottle, you know.
Yeah, no, he's definitely a utility that they should try to take advantage of, especially with him possibly being available. There's teases that he's showing up at WrestleMania, so we'll see what happens with that.
I've heard he's showing up on the India tour. Mania, he's still working Fozzie or whatever.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff going around about different kind of possibilities. So Hopefully, I mean, you know, if he is still involved, if he's going to be involved with WWE, then he'll have some kind of contract, and he probably won't be available to help them out, but maybe he won't. Maybe he won't sign a contract, and he'll come in to do what he wants, and it's kind of interesting. Chris Jericho, of all people, is the kind of outlaw who's able to do whatever he wants at this point. Not a guy who I would say expected that from ever, honestly. I didn't think that Vince cared enough about him to use him that way, but you talked about it. I mean, the guy makes himself a star. Whatever he wants to do, he's able to make himself have some value.
And I think his influence is shown on Omega and Cody in a way. Even when we'll talk about it on the Ring of Honor show, but that angle, that screamed to me like a Chris Jericho angle, what they did.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, and it definitely worked. It got the crowd into it, and it was definitely pretty smart. I mean, where they're going, I don't know how I feel 100% about where they're going and everything, but it's definitely working with the crowd, so that's all that really matters.
Yeah, and then the last thing I want to hit on is the Observer Awards. Got a lot of heat online from a lot of the old school guard, feeling like it's people. It almost feels like a completely different wrestling Observer. Like we're, I don't think I've hidden the fact why I started doing a weekly podcast on current wrestling. I mean, I think everyone knows me as a guy who's an old school guard wrestler. That's always been my passion. I always enjoyed the current stuff, but my passion was old school wrestling. And I felt hearing some people's opinions, I felt good opinions like my own were not getting heard, and that's the reason I started doing a podcast to fight some of the craziness and seeing like how influential Meltzer has become, and we're looking at some of these things. I mean, look at the most outstanding wrestler. I mean, it was all New Japan, unless you take out AJ and Lo Xiar, you know?
Yeah. Which is, I mean, a lot of it is all
eight of the top 10 wrestlers in the world work for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
No, I know. It's kind of crazy, honestly.
I like New Japan. I like the style, don't get me wrong. But there's no fucking way. I mean, Walter wasn't even an honorable mention, for Christ's sakes. I mean, I mean, let me pull up my. Who was your top 10 of last year of most outstanding?
I guess
that's our best work.
Yeah. Let me pull up my exact top 10 just so I can tell you for sure. I know that number one was Zack Sabre Jr. Number two was Timothy Thatcher. Number two was Walter. Number three was Timothy Thatcher. Number four, Kenny Omega. Number five, Kazuchika Okada. Number six, Jeff Cobb. Number seven, David Starr. Number eight, Trevor Lee. Number nine, Naito. 10, Pete Dunne.
Yeah, I had Walter number one. I had Zack Sabre Jr. number two. Reigns number three. Okada four. AJ five. Freddie Ehi six. Trevor Lee seven. Eric Royal eight. Keith Lee nine. And Johnny Gargano 10. And the only person on this list, I had Okada, Styles, and Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah,
I mean, Walter
being missing is ridiculous. I think and both Trevor Lee not being there is, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but it's kind of, I mean, the guy is really fucking good. Like, it just shows what people are paying attention to, you know.
Yeah, and exactly. It's become almost like Dave's. I mean, it's really influenced him. In the past, people used to think for themselves, and they look. It was like a snapshot of what was going on in wrestling. These are Observer Awards. They're almost like it's almost like a blowjob in a way, and seeing some of these things. I mean, it's just like a tag team of the year, the Young Bucks. I mean. They win by three, almost 2,500 votes, points. I mean, that's like saying they had a Young Buck year. I don't even think they had that. I mean, they had an okay year. Tag team is not as strong as it used to be, but they're making it. This is the way the Bucks are here. I mean, the 521st point. It's almost unbelievable. This is like a legendary tag run they're supposedly on. and they're good in what they do, but I just can't fathom that they're this so much more dominating than the rest. I mean, again, that's a Meltzer. He's been co-opted by a lot of these guys, and the Young Bucks are one of them. I mean, you see, I mean, promotion of the year. I mean, fucking, you look at some of these, and New Japan, again, I mean, they had a good year. I can't argue with that, but, I mean, there's so much things you just look at. It's just so right now, it's been so co-opted. I mean, just that most outstanding where the eight guys out of the 10 worked New Japan Pro Wrestling is almost ungodly. Ishii is the most overrated piece of fucking crap working right now. That guy doesn't have a concept, unless he's worth a great worker, on how to put a match together. That guy, no concept. I mean, no offense, two backyarders can go out there and slap the fucking piss out of each other, and doesn't make it a great match. It's just you're willing to hit each other. I mean, that's stupid. That's not the art of wrestling.
Well, no, and I mean, I think EC's a great seller, but if you want to talk about someone who can do everything that Ishii does, I mean, if you're going to have Ishii number 5 most outstanding wrestler of all time, how are you then going to have a top 10 list that doesn't have Timothy Thatcher? You know what I mean? Because yeah. I think Thatcher can do the same amount of selling as Ishii without having to, again, like you said, just slap the piss out of each other like fucking two untrained fucking goofballs in the back, like backyard. But here's the other thing, like, you want to talk about how obvious the co-opting is? I mean, I'm sorry, but 2017 Kushida being above Zack Sabre Jr. is ridiculous. It just shows that it's all Meltzer bias. Me and you both love Kushida, but I think neither one of us could disagree that Zack had a much better 2017 than Kushida. Like, I don't think that there's any question about that. But yes, he's one spot above him, but he's above him. And the reason why is that because every time Meltzer talks about a Kushida match, he always just says he's phenomenal. And I think half the fucking people voting probably have never even seen the guy. Like, it's just ridiculous.
It's just... I mean, it is. Best weekly TV show, New Japan World Pro Wrestling. How is that even considered a goddamn weekly TV show? All you're doing is taking matches from the big shows and putting them on it. I mean, that's not a TV show, you know?
Yeah, I know. Fucking,
that's a dub tape. I mean, that's what people got in the 1980s in Best of Ric Flair comp. I mean, that's not a real television show.
And I just can't believe people are watching it. Enough people are watching it, really. I mean, I don't know how that's possible. And then you have Being the Elite on there, right? It's not even a fucking wrestling show. After we get told last year that CWF doesn't count because it's not on TV, this year we get told Being the Elite is allowed to be one of the best weekly wrestling shows. It has, like, maybe some clips of wrestling that's from somewhere else. It's not... it's realistically not a wrestling show. That to me, is, as much as I think, like, oh, that's kind of nice, like, that's getting to the point where the next thing you know is that he's would have to let, like, fucking Colt Cabana's podcast be best weekly TV show if it was on YouTube or something, because it's not a wrestling show. It's just angles, and I don't know. Even that, it's like mix in between. Sometimes it's not even angles. It's just like a road diary. How could you allow that to be voted for? And, I mean, the ROH TV even being on the list is kind of ridiculous to me, to just show, like, where the voting is at. People vote for it because, what, the New Japan guys are on there sometimes? I mean, realistically, the ROH TV, I'm not going to say it's terrible, but I don't think it's good enough to really even deserve to be getting votes, let alone being above pretty much everything that WWE puts out except for NXT. Like, it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, everything other all it sums up is that storytelling means jack shit, because all the ones that are getting great votes are ones that are putting on the best matches. That does not mean it's the best goddamn television show. Okay, they're forgetting the most important thing is television is supposed to draw stuff. I mean, what the damn Japan show is matches that are already in the can. They've already been done. So that's not building anything. I mean, television is supposed to build to big matches, and so the Ring of Honors are so freaking behind the times, it means nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely nothing.
I know, most of it feels the same as like WCW Saturday Night once Nitro had completely taken off. It's just, it's filler matches that feel like they've been taped months in advance. Like, yeah.
Feud of the Year, how the fuck can we compare shoot fights with fucking scripted shit? I mean, fuck.
Well, yeah, I mean,
fucking number one, Kenny Omega, Okada, fine, whatever. I know they had an epic feud. I get it. They had an epic matches. I understand the logic there. I can see where people are staying there. Okay, but then you have Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. That's real. Okay.
I mean, that's a boxing. That was a boxing match. On top of it, that's not even MMA.
Yeah. It's like, fuck. I mean, you can't compare the two. I mean, fucking Roman getting buried fucking indefinitely. He's a damn good wrestler. People just hate him, and they just ungodly hate him. I don't understand it. Fuck, I've never felt more alienated from these damn awards, and I'm a guy who's voted on them quite often, and now I didn't vote on them this year, and it almost feels like I'm out. I'm like this relic in the 21st century. I'm Caveman Pete, and this is just ridiculous. I mean, on where the takes are, and it's all because all it is just regurgitation of what Dave Meltzer's saying, and that's great. But man, why even have these awards? They're a fucking farce.
I mean, why? Why would you write in a ballot that you like almost intentionally looks like Dave Meltzer could have written it himself to send into him? That's the thing I don't understand. Is where do these like sycophantic Dave Meltzer subscribers come from who now want to parrot back to him his own opinions? The match of the year is, I think, the most glaringly. In some ways, it's just disgusting that every single match in the match of the year for the top five here has either Okada or Omega.
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible? I'm sorry, but all of these matches are good, but I can't imagine that there's a world in which every single one of the top five matches is Okada Omega. I don't even think, I don't think Okada and Omega had the best match last year, let alone that each one of them deserves to be in the five top matches. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll see these people aren't listening to our podcast.
I guess not. I mean, Quentin gave his top matches, all three of the Okada Omega matches. I completely understand from him, especially, with his background as being a fan of Omega for just as long as I have, really. But then the rest of his top five wasn't also Okada and Omega matches. You know what I mean? Like, just against different people. There's got to be at least some diversity in the fan pool, you know?
Yeah, there's none. And then, we look at Rookie of the Year. Kane Justice gets no traction whatsoever. And that just shows, I mean, the guy, the Japanese guy got it, whatever. It just kind of shows how out of the loop, kind of think about it. I've been on a Zack Sabre Jr. guy, not Zack Sabre, but a Sammy Guevara guy for about 4 years. I mean, I got you onto him for the last few years, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But and Meltzer now is talking like he just discovered him, right? Because he's worked PWG. He can be the new Ricochet. I'm going to tell you, Ricochet is a better flyer than Sammy Guevara ever will be. But Guevara, I'll tell you, is a better promo than Ricochet. And I think he has a better personality than Ricochet. But Ricochet is so unique in what he does. So, and which I find it funny is he's comparing to Ricochet, but they're just different on so many different levels. They're not even that much alike.
Right, but it's just they have to fit into that box for him.
Yeah, which is high flying. He can do up to freaking 720 or whatever. Who gives a shit? All right, man.
Well, and the rookies of the year, I mean, Austin Theory, I just talked about it last week when we were talking about Austin Theory. I've been watching him wrestle for years already.
Yeah.
So how does he get a rookie of the year spot? It's fucking weird that Meltzer accepts that. But then the other part of it is like Bianca Belair, number 3 rookie of the year. What has she had, 5 matches on TV?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? There are so many amazing rookies out there. How did she even make the list? She's good. Don't get me wrong, I like her, but she doesn't even come into my mind for an important rookie of the year, honestly. And yeah, no Kane Justice. Like, his rulings for what's acceptable for a rookie and not, what's acceptable for TV and not, it all also plays into essentially, you know, his own personal opinions on what he's paying attention to. You talk about Sammy Guevara, he'd probably accept Sammy Guevara as a rookie even though he's not. And while I think, honestly, in some ways, sure, you know what? I kind of understand where he's coming from, Meltzer, that is, because he knows that that shit's not going to win. Like, I bet he pretty much knows Kane Justice is not going to win, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He knows, because he doesn't talk about CWF, so, you know, whatever. CWF's not going to win Best Weekly Show, even though it should, because he doesn't ever talk about it, so his readers don't pay attention, which is insane because, you know, he's friends with Bruce Mitchell, and the Torch covers CWF at least and has a really good connection with it, but, you know, that's the only place. And somehow, I think it's fucking crazy that somehow, like, Meltzer Awards and his fan base is so insulated from the world that they don't even know about the Torch. Like, that's crazy. It's just, yeah. Who are these fans that pay attention to the Observer only and nothing else?
They're on that damn message board. And then when you look at it, like, most improved. Keith Lee, number 5, okay? One, he hasn't improved, okay?
Yeah.
He's been this good forever. I've known him fucking for 6 years. I've been watching this guy for, like, at least 5 years now. And now he's most improved. Oh, because he finally got on the fucking national ski scene. You got to push. That doesn't make you better, because even that's in the rulings, you dummy voters. It's not because you get a better push doesn't make you more improved, okay? Fuck, how did Matt Riddle fucking improve?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's nothing I've seen either of them do in 2017 that they weren't doing in 2016, 2015. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Difference, Keith Lee got some more high-profile opponents. Woo. You know? He was having great matches in Texas before fucking going over and working Bola and working fucking Beyond and Evolve and all this bullshit. All right, folks. On that note, we're going to go over to CWF Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. And this was the Lee vs. Wilkins 2 no ropes match. Went 58 minutes. It debuted on Twitch, this feed. They debuted their streamed the match, the show on Twitch, and then they replayed it, I guess, on YouTube the next day. I'm gonna hit a couple things, and I'm gonna let you talk about the match. How's that, Timothy?
That sounds good.
Okay, I want to say one. I thought Cecil Miller's call of this was absolutely fucking incredible when he's going down and talking the history of the length of title runs. I thought that was great. Added so much. And put Lee in this, like, stratosphere and really put in perspective of what he's done. Too, I loved him and Smith Garrett. I thought Smith Garrett was really strong on this, too, where Smith first is explaining the psychology of not having ropes. And then I think it's Cecil explains the differences. Smith is going over the advantages of not having ropes. And then Cecil takes that cue and goes over and does the disadvantages of not having the ropes. Or I might have him backwards. But I loved it. It was kind of like hearing a couple guys discussing a football game on what they needed to do to win and type of stuff. And they took the opposite. They took two different, you know, they took an idea and they took both points of view on it. And I loved it. So I really thought commentating added a lot to this. Audio, I mean, honestly, when I knew they replaced Stutzy, and I understood what they had to do that, and they're losing Grant, I was really worried about the booking. And the booking, I don't want to say they've been a perfect 10 or anything, but they've been pretty good for the most part. Been solid, some flaws here and there. And like I'll admit, right now they're building to a Trevor Lee, John Skyler match. So now at least now that makes sense having Chet Sterling lose to Skyler. So it's like they're leading to a match, and that was my one caveat that if this all leads to a Lee title match real soon, then I don't mind him being the one to beat Chet Sterling. So that worked. I questioned about their the booking why were they letting the coach run wild and the All-Stars run wild? The booking addressed that. So I still think they could run a couple better angles, but they haven't shit the bed totally. They've been solid. They've been pretty solid. But my God, do they miss Grant Sawyer. I mean, the one camera guy, you should not move that damn steady hand camera. It should be ingrained in your head. This is your life, okay? If you move, you will get shot, okay? At one point, there Cecil's running down Trevor Lee, and the damn camera's on Wilkins. Like, what? Why? You're going over Trevor Lee. The camera should be on Trevor, not Wilkins at this point. When they introduce Wilkins, the camera should be on Wilkins. When they introduce Trevor Lee, camera should be on Trevor Lee. It's like the cameraman just spaced out. We still have weird fucking edits. At first, the show, you didn't hear the commentary at first. Then finally, they got it. They've got to get it right, man. I mean, it's the difference. I mean, it's such a big difference. That's what the biggest difference to me is. They're missing Grant so bad. And I mean, these guys, I don't want to see the cameraman. Get the fuck out of the way. And maybe I missed it, but I mean, I believe they've referenced Eric Andrews is out watching this match. I don't recall them showing him on camera. You'd think if he's out watching, the cameraman would take a shot of him, because that's should be a booking point. And I think they mentioned him out watching the tag match from the week prior. And we didn't see him there either. They just mentioned that he's out. So all these little things are just eating me up on it. I mean, I got hooked on this promotion because of great storytelling. They made the damn product look like it was shot with a lot of money. They definitely made the budget look a lot more than what they had. And they had wrestlers the storytelling made me care about. They need to get the freaking editing fixed, because it's killing me. Honestly, the camera people are killing me here. Where it's actually hurting. I mean, this is one of Cecil Miller's greatest calls. It reminded me a lot like when Jim Ross was calling 1989 Steve-O versus Flair. And that's the biggest compliment as I can give, because I think that's some of the greatest calls I've ever heard in a trilogy of matches with Jim Ross. And they had the nerve to muffle him for the first like minute or two because of bad editing. Shame on you. With that said, why don't you talk about the match in general? And I'll pipe in afterwards. Tim?
The opening with the commentary being off on one channel or one camera view was a major turnoff. The audio mixing, obviously, you could tell as they switched from shot to shot. This match deserved better from the production, unfortunately. Like they say, you know, at times they talk about stuff like that. The most you can do with the production of a match is ruin a good match. And the best you can do is just present it as good as it already was. And this was a case where they were unable to do that, unfortunately. They did kind of get their shit together towards like about a little bit in. Luckily, they were able to fix that problem. But yeah, the opening itself, you have Jerry Carey doing the intro for Roy Wilkins as his personal ring announcer or whatever. Then you have Sissel coming in and doing the introduction for Trevor, filling in the role for the big matches that Stutz used to seamlessly. Made it feel like a big match, which I think is a good reason why they always do that with the special commentator for the big matches. Run down all of the former championship history for Trevor Lee, and like, this is a big build. I mean, years this has been building. And Trevor's got that look on his face that, you know, just says it all. The guy just breathes and lives the drama and the history and everything that comes through. Trevor is looking phenomenal throughout the opening of the match. He's really taking it to Wilkins all over the ring. He's attacking the arm. I love Sissel calling it out, putting that money in the bank with that arm work, setting himself up for later. And then about 20 minutes in, it's really interesting because I think it's about 20 minutes in, it starts to actually feel like Trevor is already losing steam. He's been the guy who's been able to go. He seems to lose some focus in his offense. He seems to be kind of putting together a plan of attack, and Wilkins is able to get advantage there. Wilkins starts working him over. The use of the no ropes was phenomenal, with the focus around the posts continuously playing big key factors in the matches, getting driven into the posts repeatedly. Really, really impressive. I love the way that that was done, to play off of the storyline. You have Trevor getting rammed into it and that leading into Wilkins with some core work. I think that that makes perfect sense in a shoot aspect. You think about it that, you know, if you work over someone's midsection, essentially, it almost in a lot of ways makes more sense than any working over any other part of the body, because that's where all of your power really comes from. I think that most commentary doesn't really talk about that except for when they talk about rib injuries. And I get it, because it can affect kind of the overall story of wrestling, because why would anyone be working on arms and stuff like that when, you know, the midsection attacks, it's going to kind of pay the most long term. So Wilkins starts out with that. He's essentially weakening the base of Trevor. From there, he gets into working over his legs. He works over arms, so that by the end of it, when Trevor is selling, his entire body is just beaten down. He can barely walk from a nice big kick that goes into the post, again, playing off of the posts, selling that ankle injury. Love the call on that, too, talking about possible broken ankle, which really makes it feel like a big deal. They continue to fight back and forth. I mean, Trevor, like I said, he's just completely wounded here, can barely move, but he's throwing some big strikes when he can. Finally puts Wilkins down, and it looks like this could be Wilkins is out for the count. And then that's when the All-Stars come in, and they essentially try to ruin everything. Get the whole locker room cleared out. The guy who, to me, stands out is Snooty because of his size. He seems to run off the All-Stars with the rest of the locker room with him there. And Jerry Carey gets left in the ring. And Trevor peels the shoes off of Jerry Carey, and he's taking a Sharpie to him and signing as he throws him into the crowd, which is really, you know, ruining this sneakerheads, his nice sneakers that you always see Jerry Carey wearing.
I love that spot.
Yeah, I thought that was so great because it just plays off of that you clearly see that Jerry Carey's a sneaker guy. He's always got nice new sneakers that he's wearing. So Trevor takes them and he even signs them, gives them to the crowd. So the crowd's going crazy for that. But Trevor's too busy focusing on Jerry Carey. He gets waffled by a chair, but he just won't stay down. Now you got Cross even comes out. He's distracting Wilkins, and Trevor just decks him, lays him out. Wilkins is, you think Wilkins might be down here. And this is where, I mean, it feels like a big fucking deal, as you've got the entire locker room huddled around the ring, pounding on the mats like they're just watching this as fans. They are all young boys to Trevor Lee, even the guys who have been wrestling longer than him, because he's the champion, he's the man. So they're all getting to watch the man do his thing up close and personal. I thought that that was amazing, having them around the floor like that. Like I said, pounding on the mat, it really added to the match for me a lot to have that. It really, really put over the importance of this match. All in all, from there, it seems like they're trying to trade knockouts. They're, you know, trying to see who can put the other one down and get the Canadian Destroyer, the golf swing from Wilkins, but he won't stay down. You get both guys really just won't stay down. They keep going at it. Then they're trading submission holds. these guys just come across. I mean, if you watch the No Ropes match from years back and then you watch this, they look like two totally different guys, but they've grown in equal ways. It's like they complement each other so well now compared to then. They've grown into their own and they've just become these amazingly well-rounded talents who can do so much. So showing that depth of skill as they trade, like I said, they look like they're trading knockouts, then they're trading submissions, then they're just firing up with each other, and both of them, it's almost like they go from trying to show who can throw the bigger shot, who can do the better submission, then it's like who can take the most. They almost start, it's more about how quickly I can get back up. Then Trevor just really starts raining down with these elbows, brainbuster, more elbows, and the match is over. But it's almost the best part of the match is even William Cross is checking on Wilkins. Everything is hushed and silent. Trevor is down on his knees, sitting. He doesn't sit. He's just kneeling, staring. There's a moment where you're just concerned for Wilkins after everything, after all the shit that he's pulled and just all the terribleness with the All-Stars. It feels real and it feels like something really bad. Yeah, there's respect, there's concern, there's a lot of emotion. And Trevor grabs the microphone and he thanks everyone there that helped him, you know, supported him, everyone there that cheered for him to get up and continue to get up, and everyone, you know, in CWF who's watching. And that's it. He just says thank you to everyone. And it's after this ultimate kind of performance and the ultimate sacrifice and everything that he did, he's still gracious enough to be essentially thanking everyone else for everything that they did to be able to make him be able to pull this off. The emotions, the everything about the match encapsulating years and years of storyline. Even if it wasn't the end of the Trevor Lee title reign, it really puts a bow on the Trevor Lee. It feels like it puts a bow on the Trevor Lee Wilkins story, at least for now. I would assume it has to be for a while before they can go back to this, because this felt about as definite as it can be. And I talked about it, like the guys mirroring each other and years of interacting with each other. This was the culmination of all that. And the production issues and all that, like I said, they affected the match. This match deserved better, but it also, the match was so good that it's able to outshine all of that. I gave it 4.5 stars. I think it's definitely in my match of the year conversation. This is just phenomenal work from both guys.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it 4.5 also. And it feels like one of my minor issues was I wish there might have been a little bit more crowd brawling early on to show how much they hated each other. Now where was all the help at the big show in December, Battlecade?
Yeah, right. I know what you mean. Where's the same crowd of people coming and watching everything around the ring? I know.
I mean, that says a heel turn's coming because no one wants to help the asshole. Now everyone came out to help. I mean, that's what I mean about the consistency. And we can pick on that because Trevor does book his programs in Mid-Atlantic. And it was, like, not consistent in that we had he didn't get the help in Battle Kid. And was it because they wanted to build? Was it because Trevor wanted to build to a second match? And that's why he didn't get any help that in Battlecade. And here he gets it because they want to finish it off, you know. So I question that. But other than those little things, I loved it. I mean, this went 58 minutes and change. Really good feeling out process. Again, I love Cecil with the stats, and I'm a mark for that. And puts Trevor's title run in a historic perspective. Cecil explaining the advantage of no ropes, while Smith Garrett explains the disadvantage of no ropes. So I love that. Counterpoints. I really liked when Wilkins went to focus on Lee's back, and Lee's pissed, and so he had some revenge spots at Wilkins' back, and they moved to the arm, to the leg. I like when Trevor was like just absolutely torturing Wilkins. I loved... Again, I love all of Cecil and Garrett's psychology talk with the ropes, dealing with the ropes. I mean, just great, great bump by Wilkins off of, I forget, there was one something. I can't remember what it was, but he took this incredible bump. Maybe it was a spear of something where he bumped big. I loved the locker room running off the All-Stars. I thought it was necessary last time. It was definitely necessary here. I loved the autographing of Jerry Carey's sneakers and tossing to the crowd was a great babyface pop spot. And I really liked how violent he got towards the finish. Again, with the technical difficulties, I didn't like how they went to the crow nest shot for like the last 10 minutes. It felt sterile in a way, where the hand cams give it a kinetic energy. So I wouldn't mind the crow nest for like the early feeling out part of the stuff, because that's what you're doing is feeling out. But I felt down the stretch they really needed to be with the floor cams. But, you know, whatever. 4.5 stars. Great match. Trevor Lee is just, you know, he's a stud, bottom line. And the only thing I could complain about, those little complaints, and maybe it went a little long, I'm not sure. But it kept the whole – I will say this. The crowd was hot for this match the whole entire way. So the crowd was with them for the whole 58 minutes, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, this crowd was hot for the whole match, and it was the big main event at the end of the show, and they were into every bit of it.
And that's my take for guys who go long. If you're able to keep the crowd, I don't give a shit. You can go 2 hours, and they kept the crowd. So kudos to them, man. That says a lot. Great, great match. On that note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on 3 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
That production stuff is driving me crazy, man. It's so bad. And then now that I don't want to complain, but the Thursday thing is going to drive me crazy too, because it's going to throw off our ability to record like as easily on Fridays and stuff, just because if it's not on YouTube until Thursday, and I couldn't get the Twitch to fucking play. Yeah, we'll see. It's just annoying. You know, it's all part of the same issue. It's just them going against everything that Stutzy was about. So it's just whatever. It's not the end of the world, obviously, but it's just annoying.
Yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you're saying. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit more next week. All right. You ready?
And let me make sure here. I'm ready.
And we're back. And we're back. We're looking at NWL. And we're not really looking at episode 60 because they didn't put up a TV show. It's kind of getting kind of a little annoying. There are inconsistencies on getting stuff up. But they did put up one of the matches, which was Gary J versus Maverick, and I like this. I like Jay sneak attacking Maverick and hitting like a few topes. I like Gary J destroying Maverick's back early. You get a feeling this is pretty hate filled. That nasty German on the floor by Maverick was fucking nasty. Wasn't digging the punch off because, you know, Gary J is outweighed by like 30 pounds by Maverick, where why the heck? I mean, that's just dumb to go into a punch off, even if you are the stiff Robo Ginger. They kind of lost me towards the finish. I mean, because I loved up to that strike off, and then they kind of aimed towards the finish after that. I think they had a really strong opening 7 or 8 minutes, but then they lost me for like the final 4 or 5. I still gave it 3.25. I still enjoyed it a lot, but it felt like they peaked, and then it kind of, I don't want to say crashed and burned, but just didn't keep the momentum. Well, what about you, man?
I would say pretty similar feeling overall. Gary J is good in the quick sprints, so the opening was like the start of a big sprint, and then as it peters off from there, it loses it. I can be okay with Gary wanting to kind of throw hands with Maverick when it ends up not costing him, but in some ways he ends up losing. So I can understand both like the way that you're seeing it, but also be fine with it if he's going to lose, you know. So it kind of shows that he probably should have been smarter about it, because he's going up against the, what do they call him? Like the Bull or something like that. The Raging Bull.
Yep.
So Manny Maverick or whatever. He looks fine in that like he wasn't able to stand blow for blow with the guy who's probably got 50 pounds on him. And especially because it's like 50 pounds of muscle. I mean, Gary J's pretty slim, which helps though as well with Gary's selling and bumping around. He looks good from underneath against Maverick because he is not like he's about the same height, but he is definitely a lot slimmer. So that becomes believable, and then he ends up losing. I thought Maverick looked good. I thought they had the start of a really good match, and then they kind of lost focus, and the closing stretch was fine, but got a little bit, not spammy, but got a little bit kind of spots back and forth, instead of really kind of connecting with anything like a story. But at that point, they're both just kind of selling the tiredness and going back and forth, which a lot of people kind of do. I like when you put a little bit more nuance than just like, oh, I'm really tired, so I do one move, and then it takes a long time, and then we do another move, and we're both tired. But, you know, not bad. Not a bad match, but definitely started out a lot better than it ended.
Yep. Well, on that note, we're going to move over to NXT, and we're deep into it. They are into the Dusty Rhodes Classic, and it opens up with Sanity versus Riddick Moss and Sabatelli. Kind of just there, huh?
Yeah, I mean, not terrible. It's weird that it seems like they're trying to play up Sanity as Moss and Sabatelli as like this tag team that you should have been buying into here. Just to play off of the issues with them, right? They want to actually make it seem like there's something there that matters. So they looked good here, but it's just funny because it's like this is the first time they've really looked this good. So it's very obvious that it's trying to play into the storyline. As a team, I mean, necessarily. Like, they were interacting more and being pretty dominant. Yeah, so fine, quick, Sanity wins. It's more, I guess, obviously about the story of the tag team breaking up.
Yep. And that leads to Ciampa comes out and gets booed again, huh?
Yeah, just no talking from Ciampa. He just stands there trying to open his mouth and can't even get the words out, basically, because the crowd hates him. It's going to be interesting to see because I like Ciampa as a promo. In the past, I liked him in ROH, cutting promos, all that. But I just wonder if this much build up, if then his first actual promo is going to be enough, or if it's going to fall flat because you built so much around it for so long.
And then we got, excuse me, I'm sorry. And then we got Lacey Evans versus Dakota Kai, and explain all what went down here. This was pretty. It's a lot more than I just read on paper.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of just, I guess, storyline aspects of it. Kai, I think, needed something to stand out a little bit after being essentially Shayna's ragdoll a couple weeks back. So Evans is working over the arm. I mean, that's the same tact that Shayna was doing. So that's kind of the story there. But Kai is able to, because Evans is nowhere near Shayna's level, able to slip out of one of her submission holds and grab a kind of a roll-up schoolgirl kind of situation. But then Shayna comes out, and it's weird. It's just like, why is Shayna now wanting to pick on, like, specifically Dakota Kai? Because it felt so much like the point of the angle.
Because that was the angle. Girl who
but the angle felt like Dakota Kai just happened to be there. And now it's like, why would Shayna's, like, specifically picking to go after her. And that's not necessarily
because
she's
the bully.
But, yeah, I guess just because Kai is, like, the weak link, like the wing.
Yeah, I think it was because Kai happened to be there first, but now she knows she's scared of her, and yeah, she's a bully. And what a bully does when he smells fear is attack.
I guess that makes sense. So yeah, then, you know, then they're going at it, or she's kind of chasing her down, and then that's when Moon comes out to save Dakota Kai, because, you know, she's the good girl. She's gonna stand up to the bully, and I kind of like that she thinks she's going to be able to go up top and just hit her move, but Shayna cuts her off, gets the armbar, is looking for a Kimura with her in the ropes, but Kai shows up and hits that big kick, her finishing move, and even that doesn't keep Shayna down for very long, but she pops back up and eats the eclipse. One-armed eclipse, yeah, because the arm is so messed up. And I like that, too. They mirrored that where Dakota Kai had the KT tape on her shoulder. So did Ember Moon, to show that, you know, that's where Shayna is going. She's attacking these arms on everyone. She's leaving the whole women's division one-armed, basically. And I also like that it showed, again, like we talked about with Shayna in the other match, she was still pretty protected at the end because she just got pinned. She didn't really lose. And, I mean, here it took both of them really to be able to put her down. So even though Moon is left standing at the end, you still kind of question, is she going to be able to do that by herself? She needed Dakota Kai's help to be able to pull it off. So this is some great stuff. I mean, it's a match that bled into an angle, and it goes deeper than that. And then, like talked about last week with the interview with Lacey Evans that got taken over by Shayna Baszler, then you do that again here where Evans's match gets taken over by Shayna Baszler coming out into the angle. So there's a connection there too that I wonder what's going on. So we'll see how this continues moving forward.
Yeah, this was a legit great angle, great segment. I honestly, one of my favorite segments I've seen in a while. And yeah, it leaves you wanting more. It definitely wants you to see more of a freaking match, which is exactly what angles are supposed to do. So I would definitely want to see Moon and Baszler hook it up again. And you know what? I'm hoping maybe they go with a no DQ stip or a submission match type of skip or something. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm really excited. And you know, Baszler's like, she's that gal, man. I mean, you're high on her for a lot longer before I got onto her. So, I'll give you props there, brother.
I don't think I deserve that much props for her. Cause all it was that I got exposed to her. She's, okay, you know, she's just a talent to where she stands out. I think if anyone was watching her, they can see it. You know what I mean? I didn't see something.
See, the thing that she has is she's believable, and she has the it factor. Not one other girl in wrestling right now you believe that can just beat the shit out of you than Shayna Baszler right now. And you people can point to whatever. What is the internet feed negativity on her about? I don't understand. Is it because they... Are they working themselves into a shoot where they hate her because she's a bully and they hate her now, or and they're working themselves into a shoot, or they just legit not like her?
All I ever hear negative is that, like, people don't think that she's there yet. Oh, she's not ready yet is all I ever hear people saying. And it's just funny to me because I'm like, are you not watching? Because she's, like, very clearly ready. Like, there's no question to my mind that she's, you know, not
ready.
Yeah,
that might be a little rough around the edges and spots. But, I mean, for the most important things when it comes to – she's able to get angles over. She's believable in her role. Yeah, maybe she's not – does enough flips. But guess what? That's not her style, jerk off. She's there. She's supposed to scare you. She's supposed to be the girl who's going to ragtag your arm and take it apart. I think she's incredible in her role here, she's feeling a lot more comfortable behind a mic where the crowd legit hates her. I mean, she's probably the most believable act on the roster right now, where you believe that she's this badass biker chick.
Yeah, I think it might be
Ace of Spades.
Yeah, I think that's pretty perfect, actually. She is. I think part of it too is probably that there's that, as stupid as it is, because the fans didn't see her in NXT for years or on the indies, wherever, they don't think that she deserves her push yet. You know, there's that kind of thing.
Yeah, there is this weird fucking thing. That's almost like the Roman Reigns thing.
Yeah.
Where at first I thought they were anti him because of the Daniel Bryan push, and they fucked up the booking then. I agree there, but that's been years, and so now it's just like this weird, I hate Roman Reigns thing. I think that Bad Baszler has a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think the people who haven't, because they didn't live in Southern California and didn't get to see her grinding it out on the indies, they think that she's just got, why is she here? And all I've ever heard is that she wasn't a very good fighter, which is another funny talking point that a lot of people used, where they would say, like, Ronda was the only good fighter in the Four Horsewomen and the rest were just jobbers who, like, latched on. It's like, I mean, maybe in, like, the UFC world, but Shayna was fighting for a lot longer than
that she was. I mean, guess what? Who cares? Because it's a work.
Right, this is a work now. Okay. Yeah. But I think that people have that negative feeling. They're like, oh, just because she's friends with Ronda, she's getting this spot. But, like, you know, she was fighting in MMA before Ronda was. She was winning fights. She was just in the, like, on the, under, like, the indies and stuff. Like, she wasn't in UFC or Invicta or the bigger companies. So, like, it's just weird to talk about. Plus, she trained with Billy Robinson. She obviously cares a lot about wrestling. It's just, yeah, to me, I feel like that's the issues that people have with her, is they just, like, I haven't seen it, so I'm not sure that she's good. And you're like, well, you haven't seen it, so maybe you need to be watching then, and then you'll see that she is good. And then a bit of the, well, we only like wrestlers who grind it out on the indies for 10 years and prove that they love wrestling, you know, instead of respecting everything that she did do already.
And I think part of the we were talking about with Dakota earlier, I think they like her, and I think they want to get her in, I think they want to move her up in the card.
Right, that too.
But I think it just so happened they did it here, and then it's exactly what it is I think they need more workers, and I think she's pretty good, isn't she?
Yeah, oh no, she's fucking great. Like,
yeah.
They're very lucky to have her, and after all the years of talking about that she would never get signed because of her age and her look. And then as soon as she does, she knocks it out of the park. It reminds me of Kevin Steen, which is a guy who I think, like, people instantly did not have the same reaction to because they knew how hard he worked and he was on Austin's podcast and all this. But realistically, it was the same thing. It was like, oh, they'll never sign them. He'll never get over. And then instantly over. And it just shows that, like, that's not always true. And, like, a lot of times the people that you might think may not work, they actually do work.
Yeah, then that leads us to the Street Profits versus Heavy Machinery. I think we're both Heavy Machinery fans, right?
Big time.
So this is like a fucking kick in our balls. And Profits go over. I thought the match was fun while it lasted.
Yes.
And I thought it because of the Machinery. And then it was what it was. But God, it's just like, I think like the fans, and which is funny, because NXT and WWE skews old, that the fans all, I think the guys who are watching are more Heavy Machinery fans than Street Profit fans. I think Street Profit fans are the people who are on the writing team who are younger, Who get the gimmick. I think you got to be a certain age to understand the gimmick.
I think I'm kind of, I straddle the line because I am young enough, I think, to be in the in the group of people who get the Street Profits.
Yeah, you were 25?
Yeah, I'm actually not even, or actually no, I'm 30 now, actually.
Okay, 30,
maybe
okay.
I was 25 when we started, but I'm in my 30s, so, you know, I just turned 30 recently, and I might be a little bit old. Some of the people I know who really like the Street Profits are even a little bit younger than me. But, you know, I could get it. I could be one of these people who gets it, but I think I get the act, I just don't like it. And then we talk about the Street Profits, and I love the Street Profits, or not the Street Profits, the Heavy Machinery, because their stuff is just fucking great. And this match, you said it was a kick in the balls, which is like the finish, sure, but the match itself, yeah, the Street Profits shined. Or not the Street, God damn it, I keep saying that. Heavy Machinery shined. They had some really cool offense. They continuously show off really great double teams. Yeah. They play up the character stuff. The Solo Cup thing, I was so annoyed just at Montez Ford with his entrance. I'm like, why does he have the cup? Like, I just... Yeah. Do they not get what that is? Like, the culture of that is that that's, like, some kind of drink that would be illicit. You're not putting soda in a Solo cup and bringing it out on stage with you. So why is he being allowed to have that in, you know, a WWE property? And I'm just annoyed by it in his entrance. I think it's stupid and what it represents and all this. And then turn around and Dozovich takes a drink and charges up and hits him with the big lariat, and I love it. It's just like fucking great stupid character stuff. It's just these guys, Heavy Machinery, are so great. I get the Street Profits. I told you, like, it's the Snapchat filters, it's they're supposed to be a certain kind of guy that's on like YouTube stars and stuff like that now, who mess around with Vine videos.
At least we didn't get a vignette of them, so I mean, that's a talk. At least that's something we improved on.
Right, but we did get, like, something that showed some personality from them talking and stuff before, just recently, which was nice. But to me, I just don't see how they're baby faces, honestly, because they come across. But I think that that's the thing, is I think that a lot of people, they see that that's just how they act, too, and they're goofy, and I post stupid videos of me and my friends messing around, and we do dumb stuff, and it's fun and funny. So that's how they're baby faces. But to me, in wrestling, I mean, that kind of gimmick screams heel. And like cocky heels who do stupid things like that. So,
and does it come across that these guys don't even like each other, or is that just me?
Yeah, like they're not even really a tag team. They like
they're not even really friends. It seems like they're both trying to one-up each other the whole entire time.
Yeah, there is definitely, I can definitely see that talking point too. They don't come across like a cohesive unit at all, really.
Yeah, they don't compliment each other. It looks like they're both trying to steal the spotlight from each other the whole entire time.
Right.
As opposed to Heavy Machinery, who are complimentary towards each other, where they're just trying to have fun. And if I feel so bad for those guys, it feels like, you know, I think they're an act that would get over huge in WWE on the main roster. And it feels like they're pigeonholed here in NXT.
Yeah.
And as in position, this is where you're going. You're not going any further until everyone goes up, and then we have no one else, and then we might have to push you. Then we got Dunn versus Cole, man. Adam, what'd you think of this?
I thought that this was probably the best Adam Cole match in NXT so far. I loved Pete Dunn's arm work repeatedly. It's interesting having Pete Dunn playing the babyface here, even in NXT, at this point. But, you know, in this setting, he kind of has to. Still really brutal, but a lot, not, you know, he's not taking any shortcuts, still doing some nasty digit manipulation, which I do think is, it's still always going to be difficult for me as an American, you know, primarily growing up, or when I first got exposed to a lot of wrestling American style, where I do think of like finger bending and stuff like that as not being acceptable for a babyface to be doing, bending fingers back and stuff, just comes across heelish to me. So for him doing it in this setting, but they're also not going to have him go full babyface. It's pretty quick. They didn't really, realistically, Adam Cole did not do much but get beat up and have his kind of cronies helping him out when he can, which is, you know, fine, because that's realistically probably what he's best at here. But he was pretty game, honestly. Catching the big moonsault with the super kick is a good spot. I think I've seen him do it before with other guys, but it looked good here. Then trying to go for that, you know, the Shining Wizard to the back of the head after that, was nice for a tease. And then you get, when the Undisputed Era get involved, I did love that Dunn went all the way to the floor instead of kind of doing the thing where you just have your back to your opponent. It really showed a cleverness in Pete Dunne that I think a lot of other wrestlers don't show. You know, they'll have the guys get up on the apron and they'll just go up to them face to face, leaving themselves open in the back to the person that they're wrestling. Instead, he goes all the way out to the floor, dispatches of them, but then you still show the conniving shittiness of Cole in that he is able to catch him on the coming in, kicks the rope into his junk. But then at that point, when obviously the distraction and everything doesn't work and it looks like Pete Dunne might actually put Adam Cole away, that's when they're like, screw it, we'd rather just get the DQ than have him actually lose. And it breaks down with Roddy coming out to save him. And I guess Dunne and Roddy are going to be a tag team for the Dusty Classic, which is cool. I also think that I guess maybe because Sinclair Broadcasting's economic kind of property, their GDP is as big as some small European countries, that maybe Hunter thinks that ROH guys count as Europeans. That's why he keeps giving them shots at the UK title. It's kind of interesting to think, like, where's the connection there where he's given two ROH guys back-to-back title shots when they're both American? Yeah, good stuff, and I'm excited for this tag team, but I am going to be interested to see where it goes.
Just because it's the UK belt doesn't mean you got to be British to challenge for it?
They haven't ever clearly said that, so it seems like, no, you don't have to be British to challenge for it.
It just so happened I think originally it was supposed to speak. I honestly thought they were going to have a wrestling show with just British people on it.
Right.
I think it's morphed into something different now.
Right. So I'm excited.
Because that World of Sports show never got off the.
Yeah, because ITV canceled World of Sports, so they gave up on doing their own British show, which is, I mean, they did that one UK special after the tournament, and I think that that's going to end up being all that the UK show is, which is funny. Because I think
speaking of that, have you heard of Zach Gibson might be WWE bound?
That would be good. That would be very good, honestly. He could help fill this out quite a bit.
Yeah, I think what they're doing, Tyler Bate hurt himself. So originally it was supposed to be Mustache Mountain in the tournament. And so I think this is kind of their last minute type of thing. That's why the storyline doesn't really make sense, because Dunn even turned on his own countryman for crying out.
Yeah, exactly.
And now he's willing to stand up for Roddy, which I'm assuming at the end of all things, I think it should lead to a heel turn again by Dunn, honestly, a double heel turn where Roddy looks like the dumb baby face, because that's what they usually put Roddy in that role. Mm-hmm. Then we got the Almas and Black contract signing, which ended up being just Zelina Vega out there. I thought this was short. I thought the short stuff was fun, and I'm glad. That's the difference between NXT and WWE. NXT, because they're not they have bullet points, they're not scripted. They're able to call an audible, and when the crowd starts counting short stuff at her, they're able to incorporate it into it. And now that's going to be her nickname for a while, because they're able to the crowd started chanting it, and they played it up, and then. Having Candice LeRae come out, it was fun watching her kick the shit out of Zelina, and it makes you feel like, you know, they might have Candice second Aleister out for their match at TakeOver. I thought this was a pretty fun segment, and I thought it accomplished a lot. What you like? Do you like it?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was great. I would say the one thing, I agree with you that it's cool that they're able to call an audible, and it even worked with Alistair's history of the sitting cross-legged thing, so it almost kind of, it was nice that he had a pose that he could go to that made sense for him. But I will say that, I mean, Zelina came across more poised than Alistair on the mic, and then it felt like him making fun of her for being short, even if he's playing off of the crowd, really came across a little bit too juvenile and I wouldn't say it helped his case in coming across as like a good promo up against her, but it worked.
It didn't fit his character, because his character's ass kicker, right?
Right. So there's like some stuff to it where I question it, but it did work in the moment and the crowd got into it. I kind of think it wouldn't have been my first choice to have him doing that, honestly. Just because
it felt more like a Gargano segment, you know?
Right, Gargano could get away with something like that for sure, and the crowd would be more into it, I think, for that's probably a fair shout to call out there. But yeah, I would be interested to see if they continue with the interactions between Candace and Aleister Black. We'll see where that goes, if she helps him out with kind of counteracting Zelina, and maybe even if he wins the title, that'll be interesting. We'll see. I don't know if it's quite time to take the belt off of Almas even yet, still. I think
I don't feel like it.
Yeah, but I don't know if you want Aleister to lose clean. Too.
Maybe one of them might be pigeonholed to go up.
Yeah, that could be it. We'll see. But I did like it. Like I said, I did like it, but I did think that it didn't fit his character, and it made him come across a little bit kind of juvenile and not necessarily. But, I mean, that's how WWE works, so that's not even necessarily something to shit on him too much. But I think in another setting, I don't necessarily know that it would have gotten over, but it was working with this crowd, so it's fine. It was very good for what it was, I think, and maybe not exactly my taste.
Yeah, that's fair. Overall, I thought the show was great, and with that, I thought that Ember Moon, Shayna Baszler stuff was just tremendous, and it looks like we're starting some other angles and heading in. We have a few weeks before a takeover, so it's all heading in that direction. It's going to peak in a couple of weeks, man. I'm looking forward to it. What about you?
Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Going to be big time stuff. Watch Takeover. I don't know if there's anything else going on that weekend, but I'm definitely going to watch Takeover. I'm excited for that show.
You're kidding, right?
And then get some rest for the rest
You're
of the weekend.
You're kidding. Was that tongue in cheek? Or...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We'll be able to rest.
You got to giggle a little bit. Fucking dry humor. All right, man. On that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk the Ring of Honor pay-per-view.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back, man. We're back. We're at Ring of Honor, and it opens up with Bubba Ray Dudley. He's out doing his best Paul Heyman impersonation, trying to hype up the ECW crowd. I mean, the Ring of Honor crowd. And I wasn't looking at it. I'm like, is that Paul Heyman? Because it sounded like Paul Heyman pumping up the crowd, but it was Bubba. It's fine. It's just kind of funny because he's going into the WWE Hall of Fame and he's talking about how this is wrestling and not sports entertainment, which is, you know, it's just funny here. It felt like a total Paul Heyman moment. What did you think of it?
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone's making that point. I have the same feeling instantly. It's just, it's so glaring, especially for a guy who, you know, worked with Paul Heyman for all that time, to be doing essentially the same act exactly. And then, yes, I also think it's really funny that he's essentially so buddied up with WWE, he's going into the Hall of Fame just in a couple days. So the idea that he's just talking all this trash about how this is real wrestling, I mean, it's just, it's great. I mean, it used to at least mean something when people would say stuff like that in ECW, and now it just, it feels like it's so tongue-in-cheek. I don't think that there's anybody at the ROH show that's like, actually, like, fuck WWE, I hate them so much. Like, I think most people here probably watch WWE also. Like, right. You know what I mean? So yeah. Yeah.
Then we open up with Takahashi versus Flip Gordon. I thought this was fun stuff. All action. Some interesting near falls. I give it 3.25. What about you, man?
I was not as low. I mean, maybe I've kind of heard some people talking negatively about the match.
Okay.
Which I thought was crazy. I thought it was pretty good, but I didn't think it was like top level. I liked the, I am talking about the match right now, right? Did you skip over the opening promo with the memories and stuff?
Yeah, I skipped all that shit.
Yeah, that's fine.
You want to talk about that? Or
not really. No, I thought it was good. That's it. There's nothing else to really say. I like the kip up and the dance thing. I thought that was good. I can't really tell if Hiromu was supposed to be a heel or not, so that kind of hurts the match for me. Liked Flip doing the Samoan pop, I think they said it was. It was like a Samoan drop, but him doing a backflip out. I thought that was pretty cool. I liked him continuously going for the 450s, gets caught, Destroyer. There's like some really slick, nice stuff. I liked the Colt Cabana on commentary calling out that, like, I think Ian Riccaboni was talking about that, you know, he got hit with the, I think it was the Canadian Destroyer, but then hit a super kick. And Colt was saying, like, well, he was already on his way down while it was happening when he hit the kick. Like, so, like, kind of trying to, like, play off, like, that he was knocked out but was able to still hit the kick and whatever. I thought that it was a nice touch because a lot of people just let that kind of go, and at least he was, like, kind of pointing it out. Lazy cover for the actual finish because Hiromu knows that he got him with the time bomb, I thought. I don't know. It just shows a little bit of the respect level of ROH versus New Japan. Hot action. There was some clumsiness, but very little. They worked really hard throughout. I gave it 3 stars. I enjoyed it, but... But yeah, like I said, not making a match of the year list for me, even if it was pretty good.
What do you make of Marty Scurll versus Punishment Martinez?
I liked this a lot. I mean, from the bell, Punishment is just going all out, just taking it to Marty, showing off the size that he's got, big throws, big dives to the floor with that step-up dive that always looks so great. Obviously hits that twisting senton that sets up the big bloodied up eye from Scurll for that I thought helped add to the match. Scurll smartly attacking the leg throughout, but even that can't seem to dissuade Punishment, which I like the story there of just how badass and crazy Punishment Martinez is. Punishment kind of fighting off the finger pop, I thought that was a cool spot. The finish, I thought, really showed Scurll upping the brutality with the curb stomps and repeatedly going after him to put him away. Yeah, I thought that there was a lot of good stuff, a lot of crazy action. I gave it 3.25 stars for the match itself. I don't know. I mean, I liked it because I like Punishment in general, but it did... I do feel like there was some stuff that felt like it was just for the sake of it happening. Maybe there was some build that I was missing, but I didn't get a lot of emotion other than just trying to show off from Punishment as opposed to like why he's being so brutal. But I guess yeah. That plays into his character. But yeah, I didn't get like why he cared so much about this match.
Yeah, I went 3.25 and yeah, I said pretty much summed up everything that you said on it. I Punishment is a guy that has a lot of upside. I think sometimes he needs to get away from some of the dives and make him a little bit more special because he seems like he's doing them all the time now. And stick to being that because he's so much bigger than most of the roster for Ring of Honor, so he should be just beating the crap out of him more often. But I understand because it's Ring of Honor, he wants to do both, but. I think he'd be better off if he just became more of a, just a straight-out monster. Then we got Silas Young versus Kenny King. I just really didn't do a whole lot for him. I gave it 2.5. King, I don't know how he's a babyface. I guess because he's on The Bachelor right now, I guess. Because he's not a likable guy on while watching him wrestle. Because he just comes across a little cocky and a little, like, what's the word I'm trying to find here?
Like, full of himself? Or
Yeah, full of himself, a little... feels like self-entitled. There we go.
And
Silas Young is, you know, he's just a good solid heel. And the best part was the Austin Aries challenging Kenny King for the TV title. I thought that was a nice little piece of business. But overall, the match really didn't do much. 2.5 stars. What about you?
Yeah, same, actually. 2.5 stars. I think that it's interesting. It's totally different styles of guy with the flashy and the more grounded. But they also both have like the mixtures where Kenny King can do some kind of, he can do some suplexes and stuff like that, as well as the flying. And then, Silas also does that big kind of, Arabian press moonsault thing that he does as his finisher. So both guys have their quirks about them as well as being like kind of stereotypical style of workers. But with that said, it's funny because I think when we were watching ROH TV, I think we were complaining about the opposite, saying that Kenny King felt like he should have been a babyface instead of a heel.
Yeah.
So, and then now he's here as a babyface and he feels, doesn't feel natural as a babyface. I think Kenny King just doesn't feel natural as any role in a wrestler. Like, he's a decent wrestler who I think just has no character, not has no character, but has just never been good at the character side of wrestling.
Yeah. His offense screams babyface.
Right. His personality,
body language, and the way he talks screams heel.
Yeah. I mean, I think even back to when he was a rookie and he was first starting out and he would wear suits and take off his suits. And I didn't know early on that he was also a stripper. And I guess maybe that's what they were playing off of with that he took a suit off before he started wrestling. But I always felt that was awkward as fuck, because why is an athlete wearing a regular ass suit to the ring? He wasn't even like a tearaway one. It was like he had to take the pants off, which is weird. It's just, I don't know, that's just a weird thing. Like, someone taking their pants off in a wrestling ring is weird. Like, the snap-off pants kind of makes sense because you think of, like, basketball and sports and stuff. But I just always thought that was super fucking weird, because then you're like, does he have to take his boots off? How does he take his pants off without taking his boots off? Why is he wearing pants? Like, everything about it, and it just kind of screams for the Kenny King thing. He's awkward as a wrestler. He's not even, like, his physical side of it, but just his character side. I just think he never put that part of the game together, which is funny because he's been okay in ROH for years. He spent that time in TNA and then didn't really seem to grow, came back, and then it's like nothing has changed for decades. Or not decades, but at least for like 10 years. The guy has been basically exactly the same. So yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I'm with you, and I think he's better suited for tag teams too.
Yes, that helps.
Yeah. Then we get the SoCal Uncensored versus Bucks and Page.
I think it's funny because I wasn't paying enough attention. I just recently found out that they're called SoCal Uncensored, which I think is great because that's the website for Southern California wrestling news that's been around forever. So that's what they're named after, which is great because I think people from here know that. And then everyone else watching ROH probably has no clue, you know. I thought that was funny. The action here was good. I thought Hangman stood out a lot. The Young Bucks seemed to be almost taking a back seat to Hangman, letting him be the star of it. I felt like Kaz comes up and he's bloody, and then it felt like too soon after he was all covered in blood, or you first see it, then SoCal Uncensored takes over. It really didn't make any sense to me to essentially wait to get your heat segment when the guy is just covered in blood. Like, you could have, you know, done that a little bit later or gotten the color sooner or something. So it kind of threw that off, but it was still good. It made it feel kind of wild and out of control. The nail belt, again, it was, you know, Hangman's, and it stood out as a big crazy weapon and a big spot in there. So I thought that was good. The apron shooting star press, I thought looked even better when it's being used as like an actual splash with Matt Jackson holding I can't remember if it's Scorpio Sky or Kazarian or whoever. Yeah, I thought that there was a lot of good stuff here. I liked the big guardrail spots. The ladder comes out. And there's a table. Shane Taylor comes out to help SoCal Uncensored, but he gets taken out. There's some zip ties to the post get broken. Nick gets in a nasty camel clutch with a cane across his throat while there's also a Boston Crab, and he finally has to quit. And the Kingdom come out to jump the Bullet Club guys. Like, there was... The match itself obviously should have been wild and crazy, but then some of the angle stuff and Bully Ray and, you know, the fact that he's resetting matches, but then he's letting this happen, and then you get the Kingdom out, and all of this stuff just feels kind of sloppy with the angle stuff. It's like, God, when you already have such a wild match, you probably, as soon as it's over, need to let it breathe instead of trying to go into more wild angle action. That said, the match itself, I gave 3.5 stars. And I liked quite a bit. Honestly, there was a lot of cool stuff to happen here. And I actually even bought into the storyline between the two teams. And there was some good selling at times as well. And I think that they did a good job to... They're doing a really good job of getting Hangman Page over. He continues to meet... I mean, he's a guy who a few years back in ROH, I think we both were saying he's a lost cause.
Yeah, it just wasn't clicking. They tried everything.
They kept trying everything.
Dave Briscoe let him put him over, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was the Decade that felt like it was supposed to help get him over. Then there was the Jay Briscoe stuff, all this stuff. And then now he feels like he's finally starting to feel like a star in ROH. So that's cool. And I liked it. But yeah, I mean, there was also some issues with this that come down to ROH issues, which is that the booking and the storylines and stuff can be a bit sloppy.
Yeah, we'll say the Bucks being as babyfaces work so much better than them being heels.
Yes.
I mean, they have to be babyfaces. People don't boo them, okay? And them being ass-kicking heels just suck. They just suck in that role. So being the plucky babyface works for them. Even being the cocky babyface works for them. I enjoyed it. I gave it 3 3/4. I thought it was a big shine early by the Bullet Club. Crowd super into it. Kazarian's blood looked weird. It almost looked like it was almost like a fake cut, but I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure it was real, blade job or what have you. It just seemed odd. Very chaotic. I hated the garbage cans, the too many garbage can shots to the head. But overall, I enjoyed the match, and I thought it worked really well. And then we get dueling promos from Cody and Taven. Taven, compared to Cody, comes across really Bush League, you know? Or am I just wrong? And what do you think?
No, you're not wrong. I liked him more here than I had been liking him with the Kingdom before, before I think TK O'Ryan got injured.
Yeah.
And just before, in general, when the Kingdom really first started with him as the leader, and then I think it developed into... They all kind of started going off the deep end with a lot of their wacky looks. And I don't know how long it's been because I haven't been paying attention to ROH, but he cleaned up, and I think that this suits him more. It's a little bit more cleaned up look, a little bit more basic, and not over the top with all the gimmickry. I get what you're saying. Cody definitely comes across more like a TV star, and Taven does not, but he looked better here than he had been looking. So maybe I was thrown off a little bit about on that, and then I was just like, okay, at least he kind of looks like... He looks like he could be, I don't know, a mid-card star in ROH. While Cody looks like he could be on WWE TV again basically any day.
Yeah, I thought the match was okay. Cody focusing on the neck, head area. I mean, pretty much it was kind of there. It was much more of a setup for the reveal that it was Kenny Omega underneath the bear. That's the sucky thing where it's hard to... When the angle is so much better than the match, and it's revealed to be Omega, and then Brandy kisses him, trying to... saying about hi, about Ibushi, which that was just weird. But I loved the reveal that it was Omega underneath the drug-free bear. I actually love this angle because I felt it just had, you know, there's a good had Chris Jericho's fingerprints. Like this is something Jericho would come up with, and no one would know it was Jericho underneath, and I don't think anyone knew it was Kenny Omega. I thought it was a surprise for everybody, and they totally dug it, and the angle got over huge. 2.5-star match though. What you make everything?
I liked the cup angle as well at the end. I thought that's old, like kind of old school. So I was into it. It worked for me. I like the Kingdom coming out and helping, but again, there's some muddledness with ROH stuff. They're talking about Brandy and Taven's. I mean, I think he even said sexual history.
Yeah, like they made it like they were dating at one point or what.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about that. Like, I have no frame of reference for that at all. So I'm like, what are they even talking about? Like, are they getting something confused here? I mean, maybe they did. Maybe they dated and I just didn't know that. But it's not something that I've seen ever on TV, right? Or it's never been presented to...
I think it was something they thought would be cute for the angle and it just didn't work.
Right. So, like, yeah. So I was like, I don't get that at all. I thought, yeah, it's like... If you compare this to like Cody versus Ibushi, it obviously shows the difference between Ibushi and Taven. You know what I mean? Who in some ways are like similar. Like you could say that Taven is like a really, really low rent kind of Ibushi character wrestler in some ways. So yeah, it just shows the big difference there. Yeah, I gave it 2.5 stars also, actually. I loved the angle at the end, and I've heard some people kind of shit on it talking about, that why would you give Omega away for free on something like this? Well, I think it's genius, honestly, that you make the crowd see ROH as the kind of company that can do something like that. You never know what to expect and something.
Yeah, and he, not like he worked a match, you know, it's an angle.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big angle. It's like, I can definitely see why would you have Omega, if he could be there, why would you not have him in a match? And it's so that the crowd knows that when it comes down to it in ROH, you never know what to expect. And I think that that works, you know? So yeah, I liked it. I liked the angle a lot.
What you make of the Briscoes versus Motor City Machine Gun match?
Jesus, I'm sorry, but these guys, I don't know what the fuck was happening. I started out thinking like it was impressive that these two teams, who've essentially been with the company since the start, and we're here at the 16th anniversary. Obviously, Motor City Machine Guns were a little bit before the Briscoes. Briscoes were there really from the start, technically. With Mark not being able to wrestle due to age at the time, but he was there and Jay did work
in Boston or wherever. Massachusetts.
So I was impressed. Like these guys look like they haven't missed a step. They're able to work just as fast and do all the old spots that they were able to do. You know, I think of like the Briscoes should really be that kind of legacy act for ROH that's treated like the big deals. I mean, kind of like the Undertaker of ROH, you know, come in for the big spots, big shows, always be over, but the crowd didn't get into it. And I can see why, because I didn't get any emotion at all. It felt like they were running through spots at times. Just doing stuff to do it because they could. And like I said, it's funny because in the beginning I was like impressed, like, damn, how can these guys still do all this stuff? But then by the end, I'm like, damn, why are these guys still doing all this stuff?
Do you think the Omega angle took away from this match, as in that burnt the crowd out a little bit?
It could have. I mean, yeah, but also
they didn't do anything to suck the crowd back into it.
Right, that's it. They didn't do anything to get the crowd into it. They just expected that, the crowd is going to be into it because it's the Briscoe Brothers and Motor City Machine Guns and we're doing our thing. But they didn't give me any emotion. I gave the match 2 stars, and I think that this same match in front of a hot crowd could have probably been up to 3 stars. But because the crowd just didn't care, then it made me not care, and it showed the deficiency of these workers because they didn't work to make the crowd get into it. Like, why did they not? There's blood. I mean, God, there's big fucking sequences, crazy spots, blood, all this stuff, and... It's just like, why? Why are you guys doing all this if you're not getting any reaction? You're just doing it. You're almost at that point. You're doing it for yourself. Yeah. And that's not the point of wrestling. So, yeah.
Yeah, I gave it 2 3/4. I liked it a little bit better than you. But, I was definitely not feeling the love at all for it. And then we got Lethal versus Dalton Castle. I thought this was a really well-laid-out match. Fun grappling early on. Dalton's overhead suplex was gnarly looking. Dalton digs dings his knee. Dalton inside out on the floor. German was great. I thought it was one of Jay Lethal's better matches. He seemed like a guy who you could buy winning the title from Dalton Castle. So it was obviously well laid out. And I give it 3 3/4. What about you?
Yeah, Lethal here as the as kind of the veteran who is the kind of the stamp of approval, the benchmark on Castle is perfect. Like you talked about being able to believe he could win the title. I mean, for sure. It almost feels like the whole point of this match is that compared to Lethal, Castle doesn't deserve to be the champion. So Lethal could easily win the belt. He has to prove that he should be the champion. Lethal almost comes across with the feeling of like Lethal is more of the champion than Castle, even though Castle has the belt. So, they really play off that throughout the match, I think, really well to, by the end of it, make you feel like Castle has proved himself. Because I think that's been the question. And a lot of people, I don't know how they don't see it, because I've seen it for a long time, that Dalton Castle is actually a phenomenal wrestler. The character is just the character. But the guy, bell to bell, is phenomenal. But I think that was the story that they're telling here, is that Castle is earning that spot as the main event of the company. And yeah, the layout to make it by the end of it feel like Castle got upgraded to now he is the believable champion, having taken out the, you know, the former longest reigning champion, the big deal guy in Jay Lethal, was phenomenal there. Great stuff back and forth. Lethal being dominant throughout was really good here. He didn't have to go heel, really. He really just came across more like a grumpy veteran. Which I talked about with Travis Banks in the Inner Circle show when we were talking about WXW recently, how that was the best setting for him. Lethal right now, I don't necessarily know if there would be any point in ever trying to make Lethal a real heel in ROH ever again. But as a grumpy vet like this, it's perfect. He can work in between. He can do babyface against heels. And then in settings like this, he plays the domineering old hand who doesn't think that this young upstart deserves his spot, and Lethal should be in that spot still, you know? And yeah, so I thought that was perfect. The leg selling from Castle was fantastic. The suplexes from Castle are always great. He's working in and out of his spots and his grappling. Castle does a really good job of mixing in amateur style wrestling into his pro wrestling matches, which he does really well in a believable way. Thought that they did good teasing the finishes. Crowd got into everything without going too crazy. Lethal injection, obviously still stupid, but at least he's not hitting 5 or 6 of them. Good stuff all around, really. I mean, I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought both guys looked really good here. Both guys, you know, I mean, I don't think Jay Lethal could be any more over than he is in ROH, honestly, which is really fucking weird. It's this phenomenon where, like, Jay Lethal in the ROH bubble is like John Cena or something. But outside of that,
I think it's because they have told everyone how great he is that people believe it. You know, it's almost like Shawn Michaels in a way.
Yeah, but it's like only in the ROH bubble. Outside of the ROH bubble, I never hear people even talk about Jay Lethal.
No, you're absolutely right. No. You're right, and that's what I'm getting at. Is that the people who are watching the Ring of Honor are buying into that propaganda?
Yeah, which I'm not even saying that he's bad. I'm not even saying that he's bad, but I mean, he is presented, the Shawn Michaels comparison is probably spot on. He's presented like he's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And he's good. And here he shows that he actually is a really smart worker too. He has developed over the years, but he is not, I would not put him in like my Mount Rushmore of wrestling. He would not be on there.
Oh, fuck no.
Yeah. That said, really good match though. Like really, really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this show was good, man. Thumbs up show. I like it. We got enough good wrestling to mix in with some fun angles, you know, with the Omega angle being number one. But, you know, Austin Aries, you had Marty Scurll come out and challenge Dalton. That seems like it could be fun. So, I mean, that's some interesting stuff going on and pushing the narrative more forward in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I mean, the only issues is ROH has some problems sometimes with kind of, it feels like the left hand doesn't know what the right is doing. I've got stuff like the punishment and Scurll match came across and I thought was being presented as a number one contender match, but then you've got commentary talking about it as if it's not for sure. They're saying, yeah. Well, you would think that the winner of this would be in line for a title shot, but, you know, that's not, you know, not, it's not like the stipulation or anything. So
yeah, it's like, dude, make it more heated. I mean, all that does is make it more heated. It makes the stakes higher.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, why can't that just be clearly defined and open? There's some angle stuff, like I talked about with that trios match. I think that match was so chaotic that you probably didn't need to try to tack on stuff to the end of it. You already kind of, it's diminishing returns at that point, so that should have been saved. And but then, like, the Omega angle was fantastic. So it does, I think that that's part of the problem with ROH is always that there's a consistency issue. But when they hit really hard. They, from what I've heard, the TV has been better again. The storyline seems to be good.
I've heard a lot of things. Like, the wrestling's been really good on the TV, but a lot of the acts people are just not are into, you know?
Right. The it's not as hot as it used to be. People only care about the Bullet Club and New Japan guys. Stuff like that, for sure, you hear still. So we'll see. I feel kind of bad that I should be paying more attention to ROH because I talked about wanting to see Dalton Castle as the champion for so long, and now he is the champion, and I'm not really paying attention. But maybe I will. You know, maybe I will start paying more attention now because this show was good, and I think that from what I'm hearing, they're doing a lot of good stuff. So ROH might be on the up and up now. You know, they seemingly have a couple guys in the lower mid card that they're building up. You got Hangman Page. You got Punishment Martinez and Flip Gordon all coming out of this. Even with Flip Gordon in the loss, I think he's starting to feel like a bigger star. So yeah, it just it seems interesting for sure.
Yeah, Gresham, he wasn't even on the show, but you know, he works him a lot. And you know, Josh Woods, I think, has a lot of potential.
Yeah, so there's definitely some stuff in ROH that's worth checking out.
For sure, for sure. All right, man, on that note, Tim, anything you got to plug?
Got the WXW podcast coming out with me, Quentin, and Brock, covering Inner Circle Ambition and 16 Carat. Those should all be out shortly, so look for those on the same feed here. And then otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Sounds great. Follow me at Titans of Wrestling and Worldcast Wednesdays, where me, Kelly, and Johnny usually review World Class Championship Wrestling up on the network. Have a great weekend, folks. Catch you later.
Atención! Atención! Atención!